186 of Cowboys Rock Free, the podcast. My name is Joel Pinfield, and as always, joined by Philip Slavin. How are you doing tonight?
If you're doing well, I'm excited to actually have some football, a game to talk about, not just sit here and twiddle our thumbs and find topics to discuss. So that's a big deal. Obviously, there's some soccer on Friday night as well, but I'm too sad to talk about Cowgirl soccer right now. So let's just stop.
Well, let's just talk a little football on this one that we were supposed to last week, but thank you, Bailey, for that one. But we have the Iowa State game on Saturday, 2:30 kick in Boone Pickens Stadium, back for the first time since the West Virginia game at home for Oklahoma State. Feels like an eternity since that game happened, but we got some football here, man. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a huge game, top 20 matchup in at BPS, big-time game here coming up.
Yeah, it's huge. It really is. This is like, you couldn't ask for a better and maybe a worse situation to come out of 2 weeks off with. I mean, three weeks, really, because two idle weeks. It has a massive impact on conference standings. Both teams undefeated in conference play thus far. Obviously, Iowa State at 3-0 along with Kansas State. Oklahoma State at 2-0 because the Baylor game got postponed. Again, this is a big deal. I don't want to get into playoff talk because it just seems silly this season, but Oklahoma State is the Big 12's last real hope for a shot at the playoff. Sorry, Iowa State. Sorry, Kansas State. Losses to Sun Belt teams eliminate you. Oklahoma and Texas both have two losses. It's just, if the Big 12 is going to get into the playoff, it's Oklahoma State basically having to go undefeated. The Big 12's out of playoff this year. So that's the end of the conversation we have about that. But from the conference standings, these are two of the three teams undefeated. Obviously, West Virginia is still in it at 2-1. Baylor, I guess, is still in it at 1-1. Of course, Oklahoma is at 1-2. But if you're going to count them out, you're fooling yourself. So this is a big game for both Iowa State and Oklahoma State on Saturday, especially if Oklahoma State wants to achieve their aspirations for this season of winning a Big 12 title.
Yeah, and you know, you've got Iowa State kind of riding high after the last couple of weeks. A big win against OU a couple weeks ago, beating the brakes off Texas Tech last weekend. I mean, it was 44-7 or something, and the only touchdown was a blocked field goal or something like that for Texas Tech. So Iowa State's playing well. It's Brocktober in heavy quotation marks. Iowa State's on, they're starting to play well. And, Oklahoma State a couple weeks off, it's tough to go on back-to-back idle weeks. But I believe in this team's ability to kind of keep things rolling with the way they face a lot of adversity early on in the season. And this is going to be the first real huge test of, can they compete with some of these top teams in the conference? They're ranked sixth. I don't know if they're truly the sixth best team in the country right now, but we're going to find out a lot about what this team is going to be like the rest of the season, starting on Saturday.
I hate having rankings this season because it puts that kind of like, oh, it's the number 16. Like, North Carolina was ranked number 5 last week when they lost to Florida State. Was North Carolina the fifth best team in the country?
No.
God, no. They're in that 15 range. And honestly, I think Oklahoma State might be around that 10 to 15 range. That feels about not appropriate. But because, not everyone wants to rank the Big Ten because they haven't played a game, Pac-12 is what it is. OSU is sitting at, because they're 3-0, is sitting at number 6. And okay, I mean, that's where we are. So let's see what that means. I just, rankings mean so little this year, as weird as it is. All that matters with Saturday is you have a big contest where if you can get past Iowa State, you've got to feel really, really good about the opportunity to get to Arlington at the end of the season. I mean, Oklahoma State's the thing for like, Iowa State and Kansas State, they both faced Oklahoma. They've both gotten past TCU. Those are big. And while Iowa State still has Texas and Kansas State, OSU has Oklahoma, Iowa State, Kansas State, Texas, literally all in a row. So you get Iowa State, Texas at home, and then at Kansas State at a week and at Oklahoma. So the next 5 weeks are so monstrous, and there's not a week off. I mean, there's literally a week off between Kansas State and Oklahoma, but there's not a week off for the next month plus for Oklahoma State. So I hope they're well rested. I hope they're wet ready. I hope they're prepared. And I know we've been waiting for football, but it's not just football. You've got the stretch of Oklahoma State season to determine whether or not we're going to know within probably the next 3 weeks if Oklahoma State has a real shot at getting to Arlington or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think best case scenario out of this stretch is for Oklahoma State to go 3-1. I'm going to put an OU loss in Sharpie. I'll just tell you guys that now. I mean, you guys have listened to this podcast for 3 seasons. You know my feelings on playing Oklahoma. Like, it is what it is. But you have 3 good teams that you're going to play over the next 3 weeks. But it's 3 winnable games too. I still believe in the talent of this team that they can go 3-0 over the next 3 weeks against Iowa State, Texas, and Kansas State. Let's not overlook Iowa State right now. But if we're going to talk about this stretch, it's huge, and it's also a very distinct possibility. Oklahoma State can go 3-0, and then you got OU where we can pray. But more than likely, you're going to go 3-1 out of those 4. But if you go 3-1, you're pretty close to locking up a spot in Arlington, because you're probably at that point one of the only teams in the Big 12 with 1 loss overall, and you know, conference standings notwithstanding.
Yeah, again, look, if you chalk up OU as a loss, and I don't care how they've started, there's a reason that Vegas still has Oklahoma as like the favorite to win the Big 12, even at 1-2. Oklahoma State has the slate it still has. Iowa State's got to win a bunch of games. Kansas State's still got to win a bunch of games. Kansas State doesn't have Skylar Thompson anymore. And we don't know how they're going to look with Will Howard moving forward. They still have a lot of games left on the schedule. There's a reason OU is still the favorite to win the Big 12, because they're not out of it. And remember, they're going to get players back. There's quite a few guys who, for suspension and injury, outside of – I can't think of which defensive players, but they expect to get a lot of guys back on October 31st when they go to Texas Tech. So by the time Oklahoma State goes to Norman, OU is going to be playing their best ball of the season. They're going to have all these guys that were suspended back on the team. Like, you're not going to face the same Oklahoma that Kansas State and Iowa State had the benefit of facing, or even Texas, who probably should have beaten Oklahoma a couple weeks ago. You're going to face an Oklahoma that's looking like we all thought they would at the beginning of the season. So just understand that, and when we get to that point, that's what puts that much more pressure on this game, Texas, and a road game at Kansas State, because that is a really tricky slate. And no, I don't think any of those teams are great, but we still have a lot of questions marks about Oklahoma State, including this week. You know, you've had all this time to wait, and we'll get to our picks here in a bit, but like, my big thing is going to be, it's a lot of time to wait. I'm not getting into the whole quarterback. We're going to play 2 quarterbacks. That sounds like the most Gundy smoke I've ever heard in Gundy smoke. But we expect Spencer Sanders to take a big step forward this season. We've seen him for a drive and a snap. We still don't know what he's like this season. We don't know. And he's had a lot of time off. He's had time to get healthy, but it's been a big break. This is a big game. This is a really, really big game. Oklahoma State's in a really tough spot through this four stretch of games. Not getting the game at Baylor, I think, is really tough for Oklahoma State, because I think they would have won that game. I think it would have been a nice warm-up for them and for Spencer Sanders before they hit this 4-game stretch. So there's a lot of pressure on this game after basically spending 3 weeks not getting to play football, like a game. It's a lot. It really is. This Saturday is huge for them. And yes, if they lose, they still have an opportunity to get to Arlington. I just think with as tough a stretch as these next 4 games are, you really, really don't want to start with an L, because that's a tough spot to put yourself in. And it's one Oklahoma State's put itself in time and time again. You know, usually they start conference play with a loss and they're having to work from behind early on. They've gotten a couple of Big 12 wins. That's awesome. It's over West Virginia and Kansas. Kansas is going to finish at the bottom 2 in the conference. West Virginia might finish in the top half. That's a nice win. But this is the stretch, and it starts on Saturday. And you would be nice to put yourself at the front of the line and stay there as long as possible, then start from the back. I mean, similar to Oklahoma's having to do with the losses to Iowa State and Kansas State.
Yeah, to give us a little bit of the Iowa State perspective in this game, Levi Stevenson, who is a contributor over at Wide Right Natty Light, is going to come on and talk a little bit about what we can expect from Iowa State this weekend and get a little bit of reflective. I mean, it's going to be an interesting interview, and I'm curious what he has to say and how he feels about this game.
Yeah. Levi is fun. I have him on my show all the time. Levi is a hoot. I assume he will be at least buzzed for the show.
Well, we welcome that. I have beer in hand right now, so it's all good.
I'm doing whiskey right now because I've got a.
Ooh, what you got?
It was a bullet rye that has been infused with pear. Rye is best for infusing. Rye is best if you're going to do like infusing or anything like that. It's just better than bourbon. So I put rye. So I got a little pear in it. I got some really good stuff, but.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, it's just sweet nectar of the gods.
I did some blackberry peach whiskey infusion back in the middle of quarantine that turned out pretty well. I need to get back on that track.
We're getting into the fall, so I think my next batch is going to be some sort of combination of like orange and cinnamon and not apple cinnamon, like orange and cinnamon and something else. I haven't quite figured out what yet. It might be like
a pretty good, like kind of rip on an old fashioned. The wheels are turning a little bit for stuff like that.
I'm going for some fall flavors. I had I got some thoughts. I'm gonna do something, and then I've just got a really nice bottle just sitting up there that just my whiskey rocks aren't cold. So I was going with this because I'm not gonna put an ice cube in the good stuff, like the really good stuff. It's gotta just be. Whiskey rack chilled. Okay. Let's go ahead and bring our surely inebriated guest upon the show.
I will be severely disappointed if he's not. That's going to be my first question for him here on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Yeah. All right. Philip and I are now joined by Levi Stevenson. He is a contributor over at Wide Right Natty Lightning and give us the Iowa State perspective on this big game on Saturday.
I'm going to say contributor is a bit. I mean, it's not. I mean,
short selling that shit, aren't you?
He sometimes contributes to the site.
Levi, how you doing, man?
I'm offended, is what I am.
Yikes, man!
This is garbage.
Hey, this isn't my show. I'm just here, you know, to fill the airwaves.
All right. So I was told that there was a good chance you were going to have a drink while we record this. I'm assuming you have one here, right?
Yeah, I've got a big ass glass of Slipknot whiskey.
All right. We are going to roll with the punches on this.
Like the band Slipknot. It is their whiskey.
Fantastic. They're
from Iowa, and they have their signature whiskey at Cedar Ridge Distillery.
Huh.
It's really good.
All right, then.
We might have to have a little off-pod conversation about some bourbon swaps through the U.S. Postal Service. So.
Alcohol burp.
It's never as good coming back up as it is going
down. There's a reason I've got this nice pop filter in front, because not only does it stop the pops from my peas, but it also stops the bad odors from my alcohol burps.
Yes, because there's nothing worse than smelling alcohol burps on while you listen to your podcast.
Well, I have to smell it because it sits nothing. There on the freaking pop filter.
We're going off the rails faster. We got to bring it back quick. Philip, start us off.
This is what happens when you invite Levi onto the show. That's all I'm going to say.
And this is the first time I've interviewed him, so I understand.
Oh, this is par for the course.
Let's be real. Let's just establish this first time. You're not interviewing me. I'm interviewing.
Fair enough.
Cheers. We haven't even put this into like full gear yet. Like we're still in like.
We haven't started this shit. We're all just all first drinking.
Gear. We're just in neutral.
It's all drinking. Zoom call, which I'm a fan of, but
I don't podcast without alcohol. That's just if people aren't aware of that.
The podcast beer is like a top three.
Yeah, it's up there. So the one that keeps going around is shower beers. I don't know. I've done that. It's okay.
Shower beer is top tier.
Shower beers are fine.
Here's the deal. There's the problem is that people misconstrue shower beer just like, oh, it's Tuesday. I haven't showered in 3 days. Let me crack a beer while I shower. Like, no, you dirty piece of shit. A shower beer is after doing like hard physical like labor. Mm-hmm. You're sweaty and dirty. You're going to go take a hot shower. You're tired and thirsty. And an ice cold beer while you're in a hot shower cleaning off the filth is really, really satisfying. It's not just like, it's been a while and I'm starting to stink. Let me grab a beer. No, you're just an alcoholic in the shower. There's a big difference.
No, you're just an alcoholic taking a shower is all you're doing.
There you go.
I will say that another good top tier beer, it's going to sound kind of cliche and kind of corny, but first beer of tailgate season.
Oh, yeah.
That's a top tier beer. That's a really
good beer. Cracks. It pops different. There's a different that sound. It's
just perfectly crisp.
Yeah.
No, but a podcast beer is definitely way up there. Very good.
See, the other one for me, but it's more specific, is it's the first dark, heavy beer of the fall season for me. Once it's cool enough for me to go, someone bring me a porter.
That drinks beer in the fall?
No, I drink beer all year.
Dark beer.
I drink heavy beer during the fall. I can't do it during the summer as much.
I love oatmeal stouts. I'll have oatmeal stouts if it's 100 degrees outside. Those are like if I have to like cut it with a knife, that's where I'm at.
On the other side of that coin, like that first like really nice spring day, and you got that really nice like summer beer type, you know.
Yeah. I do appreciate on a warm day though, getting a good like a Shandy or just something, like some sort of kind of fruity beer. Yeah, all about it. Yeah.
So this is the one thing that brings.
But I'm doing this for you guys.
This is the one thing that brings Iowa State and Oklahoma State fans together. Drinking is a love of alcohol. Like I understand everyone's like, we also like beer. We're like, no, sit down, sir. No,
like you like beer. You don't like beer.
Yeah, there's a large difference between that. And every fan base is always like, no, we love beer. Like, look, there's different kinds of loving beer. There's like Arizona State loving beer, which is really less about loving beer and more about just loving to party and getting trashed hammered. Mm-hmm. And then there's like SEC Ole Miss wearing your button up tucked in like a douche, drinking beer, which is less about the actual beer and it's usually bad.
More about the pageantry of the whole deal.
Yes. Iowa State, Oklahoma State is two ag schools are just like, nah, we just drink
beer as a sport. Yes. Like that's just like it's not just to just for the thrill of, you know, it's not just like the Arizona States or whatever, where it's just you're just getting just shit faced drunk just to do it. And you're also not doing the little hoity hoity toities, you know, deep south, you know, drinking because I'm with my friends or whatever.
It's more for image than it is for actual.
Right. It's for show. It's for show or whatever. Whereas like good Iowa State, Oklahoma State type drinking, you know, Midwest, whatever you want to call it, Big 12 drinking or whatever. That is a hybrid of the two that takes a true Iron Man / Iron Woman / Iron, whatever you identify as, to get after it.
So I guess we should talk some football.
Eventually we will get to football.
Let's talk some football. Okay. Let's just hop into the topic that has become almost cliche because I want to get it out of the way and I want to have like a real conversation about it. Can we talk about Brocktober for a minute? Because sure. I think here's my thing. And I've been saying this on my show for a while. It's less about the month. It just conveniently works. Cause look, since 2017, Iowa State, Matt Campbell in Iowa State is 12-1 in the month of October in games played. So it's not just about Brock Purdy. It started in 2017. And Brock Purdy kicked off Brocktober against Oklahoma State, 2018. Yeah. That was his first game, started on the second drive, and the rest has been what it has been. And I get it. It's a twofold thing. It's a weird thing to be proud of the fact that your team doesn't get going until October and basically takes a whole month to finally start caring about winning games. On the other hand, it feels less about the calendar. I know that they're 2-0 in October right now. I understand that. But it feels less about the calendar and more about it takes that long, really even for Brock Purdy, to get going. That's been the case last year. That kind of feels like how it's going this year and with Matt Campbell coach team. So it's what worries me about this game is it's less about it's October. This is the time of the year. And more about game four is when things start kicking into high gear. Game five, which is what this will be for Iowa State, is when you expect an Iowa State Brock Purdy, like that's why people keep thinking they're going to win 10 games, maybe contend for the conference championship. We should be talking about Brock Purdy as an NFL draft pick kind of stuff kicks in. Does that feel like a more fair like explanation of it?
Yes and sort of yes. So you are correct in that it's, you know, it usually takes, it's not necessarily Brock Purdy that takes some warming up. It's more the offense that has to get going. It's the offense as a whole, especially the offensive line and the play calling. The play calling is almost what needs to get warmed up more than anything. And so it does work out that October is just the time where they get hot because that's when everybody's still healthy and the offense is clicking. That's when you go through and then you can do that stuff. Then November is kind of hit or miss because people are hurt or whatever. Or like in the last couple of years, your schedule gets harder. Whereas this year for Iowa State, it's kind of the opposite. They've already taken care of a lot of the hard part of their schedule, which was good. They took apart care of it early in the season, which in a time when ordinarily they'd still kind of be getting up to speed. Well, they got up to speed. They took care of Oklahoma, TCU, and Texas Tech already. Texas Tech, you know, you can argue how dangerous they are, but TCU, when they want to be good, they can be good. They're you know, up and down, but when they want to be good, they can be really good. And Oklahoma is Oklahoma, not the Oklahoma of old, but they're still Oklahoma. So it's interesting because you know, this is right about the number of games into the season where you really feel like Iowa State's really starting to click and they're moving. And they're really hard to stop, especially on offense, and the defense is really starting to click. But you know, and that could definitely be the case up to this point, because we've seen them steadily improving every week, but they've looked really good the last couple of weeks. I mean, they have looked in October form in October, despite it only being the third and fourth game, you know? So it's partly about getting farther into the season, but maybe this season is different where they've improved more quickly than they have in previous season, and it just kind of gets overshadowed by the Louisiana loss, which that we can talk about that more, but I'm fully like, as far as it, pretty much any Iowa State fan's concerned, that game never happened. Like, not just because we'd like to forget it, but literally just because it's like that was an anomaly based on how they've been playing since that game.
Well, but you could make that point against Iowa State's non-conference schedule most years, what they do in September that was an anomaly compared to October. That's a fun argument to make. But
the difference though is that when you play like in September and you play like when you play an FCS school or you play Iowa or whoever it is, you're playing a few different games. So you can't just be like, oh, it's a one-off thing. They just started slow. And then you say, well, they got better late in the year. Remember, but Iowa State's second game came out and beat TCU in their own house. Third game came out, which, you know, second game is usually when we play Iowa, whatever, but, and we usually are kind of like, but we win and beat Iowa. And then the third game, which is kind of like where they usually kind of start, you start to see some signs of life, beat Oklahoma. And then the fourth game is where you start to see the lights really kind of start to turn on. And they beat TCU they beat Texas Tech in a pretty boring game that was never really close from the beginning. And, And now we're getting into that. So, you know, I guess you can sort of say that, well, every team gets better throughout the season. Say, well, if we could go back and play that Iowa team at the beginning of the season, well, we'd beat them. Well, sure. But that's, you know, there's multiple games where, like last year it was the UNI game where that went to overtime, and then it's the Iowa game and, you know, whatever. So you say, like, well, if we went back and played both of those games now, we'd go 2-0. But that's two games. It's multiple games where it's just starting slow. A one-off at the beginning of the season that then turns into the team is actually playing pretty good over the next few games. That's one where you can kind of lop that off and say that's not really representative. Plus, because we part of it also too with that game, we found out a few weeks later that like 30 something players had missed the previous 2 weeks before the game because of contact tracing. There have not been any positive tests on the team for a long time, but because of contact tracing, like 30 something players had gotten held out for the 2 weeks leading up to that game. So a bunch of guys just hadn't practiced for like 2 weeks, and it was like a bunch of like key players. So that factored into it as well. So that's why I'm like, in this particular season with all the COVID stuff, and then it being literally truly a one-off game, I'm kind of lopping that off, and I think that loss is going to overshadow at least some of what happens this season, but I think it right now it's currently overshadowing far more than it should, especially Brock Purdy's performance.
Speaking of Brock Purdy, here's my next question. I'm curious what the perception of Brock Purdy is to Iowa State fans. Because from an outsider's perspective, I think he's a very good quarterback, but he has moments of brilliance, and then he has moments where you're like, what is he doing? And I'm pretty sure he's allergic to actually stepping into a throw. I'm curious because, I'm sure that you guys see some of that Jekyll and Hyde a little bit too. I'm curious what the overall perception of him is.
I'm not sure if it's so much Jekyll and Hyde as it's more of a gunslinger type mentality. People said the same thing about Brett Favre for a long time, but that dude's in the Hall of Fame. If Brock Purdy is Brett Favre, I'm cool with it. Brett Favre with some legs, whatever. That's fine. You take the great moments with the thing. It's just like every quarterback. Every quarterback has bad moments. Trevor Lawrence throws interceptions. Sometimes he takes chances, and that's part of what makes Brock Purdy great, is that he takes some chances. And that dude can thread some damn throws down the field. Mm-hmm. Stepping into a throw thing, we're a full 2 years into the Brock Purdy experience. At this point, since he is still throwing off his back foot on occasion and stuff like that, it's time to start reevaluating how we look at that. Because it's not just he does that when he's panicked type of thing. He does that fairly frequently, and he's pretty, honestly, kind of good at it. There's times where, the back foot still, he'll sail throw or underthrow something a little bit because it's harder to control your power when you're throwing off your back foot. But there's a lot of times where he throws off his back foot, and that thing is on the money. And I'm at the point now, and I've talked to a couple other people about this, especially, and a couple of people that are really in the know. One of them is Jay Jordan. He used to write for us. He writes for Cyclone Fanatic now. He played football at Iowa State. He's a fountain of football knowledge. Knows everything, just about everything you can hope to know. And we were kind of both in agreement that throwing off the back foot is almost kind of a timing mechanism for Brock, where he uses that weight transfer to kind of time up his arm action and things like that. And he uses that almost as an accuracy trigger for him. Throwing off your back foot, not by the textbook, 100%. It's not a textbook type of way to throw, but every guy has their own little quirks, and Brock says that he throws off his back foot sometimes. He's still pretty damn good with it, though.
To be fair, I said that mostly in jest, but that's very interesting.
But it's something that comes up quite a bit. I know, there's another Oklahoma State, is it Adam Lunt?
Adam Backfoot Purdy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or whatever. He brings it up all the time or whatever, and I think I've gone back and forth with him a little bit on Twitter about it, too. He's more critical of it. That's kind of an old school criticism of quarterbacks. It's still a somewhat relevant one, but it's kind of an old school criticism of quarterbacks. Cause there's a lot of quarterbacks now that throw off a kind of weird angle. When Russell Wilson is throwing out of the pocket, he throws off his back foot all the time, not like in the dead center of the pocket, but Brock does that once in a while too. And he's had a success with it. I'd look at his completion percentage last year, but it was like 70% or something like that. He's doing plenty well, throwing off his back foot, and it's just kind of part of his thing. So, and as far as perception among Iowa State fans, he's still Brock Purdy. He owns 21 careers. He owns 21 school records. He's going to own career passing touchdown record maybe this week, probably the week after. He's the greatest quarterback in school history in two seasons.
So far, if I understand correctly, Brock Purdy is both Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson.
He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's Brett Favre and Russell Wilson.
Oh, sorry. He is Brett Favre and Russell. Okay, so awesome. Okay.
He's a hybrid. He's a hybrid.
Two of the best quarterbacks to play the game. Got it. All right. Okay, awesome. All right, so to me, the key to this game is going to come down to, I'm glad we're talking about Brock Purdy, quarterback play. Oklahoma State and Iowa State have two of the – at this point, and I'm weird with using college football stats because there's different games played and opponents and blah, 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 blah. But two of the best run defenses in college football, Oklahoma State's a 10th overall, holding teams to 93.7 yards per game. Iowa State is 13th overall, holding teams to 97.3 yards per game. So these are two good run defenses and two teams with two of the best running backs in the Big 12 in Chuba Hubbard.
Two of the best in the country.
Yes. Yeah. Period. Look,
that's not even arguable. Two of the top five, for sure.
And look, you can't not love Breece Hall. Like, you can't watch Iowa State and be like if you just want to be the angry fan who doesn't like him because he's good, like, that's fine. Go over to the children's table and sit with them. The grown-ups are going to sit here and watch Breece Hall and be like, damn, that kid is sincerely good. And look, the Big 12's got some really, really good running backs here. You have those two. Letty Brown for West Virginia has been fantastic. Obviously, no more Puka Oklahoma's for Kansas.
Like, spring running back is pretty good. Puka Williams is good.
Shocking that Oklahoma has like multiple. Oh, no, they've lost three running backs.
The guy that's starting now, what's his name?
Gowan? Seth Gowan?
Yeah, Seth McGowan. Like, he's really good. I know, because they had it was Trey Sermon transferred, and they had
Kennedy Brooks opted out.
Or whatever, and then the Seth McGowan guy shows up. He's really good.
Congratulations! He's the third string 5-star.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's like, and then, I mean, who doesn't have a good running back in the Big 12?
There's third stringers on both teams, and there's third stringers on teams like Oklahoma and Alabama, places like
right,
that.
Right.
So, yeah. Really, really good. Oh yeah, and I feel bad. Like, I feel like this isn't a shot at Letty Brown. Letty Brown's going to be the guy that we're all really upset is left off the like first team All Big 12. But there's only so much room for running backs on first team, but he's going to run like a first teamer. But I mean, enough about West Virginia.
Or just like Puka Williams, basically.
Yeah. But Breece is legitimately good. So it's interesting to see two of arguably the two best running backs in the Big 12 against two of the best run defenses in the Big 12, which is why I think this is going to come down to quarterback play. Like, this is really going to fall on the shoulders of whichever quarterback plays the best on Saturday is going to be on the team that wins, because the both running backs are good enough. They're going to get their opportunities. They're going to get their yards. These are two good defenses we've seen so far. They're two suspect offensive lines. I really think Okay, go ahead.
I would say it's run blocking this year has been outstanding. If you go back and watch the Texas and the Oklahoma games, they owned, and the TCU games, really, they owned the trenches. The offensive line did. I mean, Breece Hall is really good. Part of the reason he's averaging $140 a game is in part to the substantial improvement from the offensive line in the run blocking game. Pass blocking is still fine. The run blocking, Iowa State right now is playing like the best run blocking unit in the Big 12 right now.
Okay.
Honestly, though, if you're like kind of stereotyping there, totally fair stereotype, because Iowa State's offensive lines have been butt cheeks the last like 10 years, 20 years,
yeah,
30 years. I don't know.
I mean, that's kind of a Matt Campbell staple for a long time, is suspect offensive line play. I think this comes down to quarterbacks. I do think this comes down to which quarterback has the best game on Saturday, because I think that's going to give that team the edge in this game. So I'm curious what you think is the position group or spot that will be most likely to determine the game winner.
Well, I did want to touch on another point from earlier. As far as the defenses go, Iowa State and Oklahoma State have played two very different schedules up to this point. So the total yardage thing is a little bit misleading.
I know.
Because Kansas has a good running back, but their offense is ass. West Virginia's offense is not good. Tulsa's, I'm just going to assume that they're not good because it's Tulsa. But Iowa State has played Oklahoma, Texas Tech. Both of those can move the ball. Louisiana Lafayette can actually kind of move the ball, and they held them pretty good. Even if the rest of the game didn't go very well, they held, you know, a team that ordinarily rushes for like 260 yards a game, they held them like 105 or something like that. And, you know, so I would say at this point, just because of the schedule played up to this point, Iowa State's number feels a lot more solid than Oklahoma State's.
That's fair.
Not to say that Oklahoma State's defense isn't or can't be good, or, you know, it's the evidence is less solid for them.
The samples have been so incredibly different.
The samples are, well, they have one less game, but two, the sample size, yeah, like the samples.
Very different schedule. So absolutely.
They're so different.
Comparing Tulsa, West Virginia, and Kansas to TCU, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Lafayette, or Louisiana. It's very different things.
Yeah, right.
I think the most interesting point on Oklahoma State, State's defense I found is the defensive scheme shifted after the Baylor game last year. First time we saw Knowles shift the defensive scheme came against, ironically, Iowa State
yep. last year. That's what threw Brock Purdy off. Which
if you go all the way back to that game since then, and the only difference between the defense last year and this year, realistically, is losing A.J. Green, which is a big loss. Starting corner, been there for a long time, very good cornerback from the Big 12. But he's the only real loss from the defense. The defense since then, if you want to go all the way back, and I understand that we're now including games from last season, which what does that tell you? But the defense is similar enough to last year's works. Opponent is 18.3 points per game, 351 yards per game, 5.1 yards per play. So sure. I understand the argument against who Oklahoma State has played, and I don't think that the numbers for Oklahoma State will stay as great as they are once they face better competition in the Big 12. I wholeheartedly agree with you there. However, sure. if we go all the way back to when this defense shifted, and because you have basically the same defense except for one guy from last year, I do think it's fair to use last year's stats during that stretch with this year and use that as a 9-game run and say, I think this Oklahoma State defense is pretty dang good.
Sure. There's a couple things there. One, like you said, the scheme shifted right before the Iowa State game, so they had no tape on this new defense, and it bit Iowa State because that game was a perfect storm of a couple different factors. One, the change in scheme that the Iowa State didn't know how to prepare for, which is the same thing that happened against Louisiana, because Louisiana just started to they just manned up on everything, which was they kind of threw Iowa State's game plan for a tizzy, So last year you had they changed the game plan right before the week. And also for some inexplicable reason, and I wanted to punch him in the throat for this, Brock Purdy threw 62 passes. Tom Manning needs to answer for that nonsense. 62 passes. Why? You have Breece Hall. Why are you throwing 62 passes? You know what? That's last season. I'm not going to get mad about it. So anyways, we come back to this season. One, Lord help me if Brock Purdy throws 60 goddamn passes in this game. I will publicly come out and start flaming Tom Manning. Holy cow. But that's not going to happen. Two, the new defensive scheme that Oklahoma State's running, there's tape on it now. And that's two really big factors. Because when you throw 62 passes in a game, the defense stops rushing the quarterback, and they just sit robbers all over the place in different space in the center, which is where Iowa State likes to throw the ball. So yes, Oklahoma State has definitely improved from last year. We know that their numbers are really good right now. I just want to keep, because Iowa State is a good offense. When they're good, when Brock Purdy is good, Iowa State is a very good offense. So I think that this is the real test this weekend to see. Is the Oklahoma State defense for real? You know, if they can slow down Breece Hall and Brock Purdy, then we'll be like, yeah, this Oklahoma State defense is really good. I'm not trying, like, not because Brock Purdy and Breece Hall are like incredible and nobody can stop them. Remember, that's obviously not true. But
this is by far the best team that Oklahoma State has faced thus far this season.
It's the most competent offensive team with the biggest variety of weapons. Because like this one, you know, we've got tight ends that we use, and you know, three of them. And you know, you got the running back, the tight ends, you've got receivers, you've got a good quarterback, you've got a good run blocking O-line. It's a really pretty well balanced offense that Oklahoma State will have to slow down. So this is the true litmus test for Oklahoma State, in my opinion, both offensively and defensively, to see where they're at. Because Chuba Hubbard, still a very good running back, no doubt, as his stats anyways have taken a step back. Not to say that he has taken a step back, but his running game is not quite as explosive. Is that probably an accurate assessment?
Yeah, the musical chairs that Oklahoma State had to play with the offensive line early on in the year definitely played a factor. And sure. It seems to be, from listening to the guys over at tape, doesn't like you mentioned Adam Lunt, talk about the blocking scheme is a little bit different this year from Sean Gleason to Casey Dunn. And it just took a couple of games to adjust. The West Virginia game was his best game to this point. He was able to, you know, got in the end zone, had broke off some bigger runs than we've seen. So with a couple weeks with the same offensive line, even though they didn't play, but getting those guys together in practice and getting those reps, I think it's going to pay. It'll be interesting to see the improvement from a few weeks ago playing West Virginia and Kansas. Or Kansas, not what Kansas was the best game, not West Virginia, my bad.
Well, yep. You take in the fact he seemed off.
To last year's matchup, too, where obviously both teams have so – yeah, go
ahead. he seemed off. He absolutely did start the season. And we know that he had had to take time off due to contact tracing for sure. COVID at one point in the offseason. So like many other things, I think it took him a little bit of time to get – I think it's taken time to get to normal. I will be curious to see if the West Virginia game carries over, because if it does, I think he's back to being Chuba.
So what I was going to start to say there too is that another contrast to last year's game is that last year Iowa State's pass rush was basically non-existent. Ray Lima was not good last year. Jamal Johnson was fine, but the defensive line did virtually nothing, and they didn't blitz hardly at all. So they were basically just sitting back in their eight deep. This year's a different story. Iowa State's pass rush is very good this year. It's really good, and they don't need to bring six guys. They can bring four and put lots of pressure on the quarterback. Will McDonald's is an animal. He's leading since November 14th or something like that. Basically, the last like eight games or nine games or whatever, he's leading the country in sacks. At 8.5 over his last eight games, I think, or something like that.
And that's going to be where Spencer Sanders is going to have to be able to make good outside the pocket and make plays. If right. Shane Ellingworth was really having to play and they're able to rush four and get to him, that does concern me a little bit. But I think the running game of Spencer Sanders and his ability to make plays outside of structure is going to be the counter to that.
Probably.
I'm curious how if he truly is 100% from that sprained ankle we saw back in the first game of the year, sure. Then we'll see – you know, a true chess match there.
And that's why I think I'll be curious to see when, you know, if/when it shows up, because with the way that Iowa State started to slow down Spencer Rattler in the second half, and it's actually started to slow down because what Oklahoma likes to do a lot is they like to run these little delayed halfback shovel passes, basically right, you know, they kind of come out just to, you know, right behind the left tackle basically, and it's kind of a delayed shovel pass, and then they go underneath, and then the running back takes off for like 30 yards. They did that. First time they tried against Iowa State, took off, they got like 35 yards on it. Then from there on, John Haycock put a spy back there, not only to eat up that shovel pass, but to kind of slow down Spencer Rattler, who was having some success kind of running around the pocket a little bit, getting a little bit of that. So I am curious to see if/when we see a spy. They were using defensive end as a spy. So they were kind of creating kind of this weird leverage situation with their blitz, where you'd have a linebacker or two coming in off of one side, you'd overload one side of the line, and then Jaquan Bailey would step back and spy. And there was a few times where he specifically did that and then ate up a shovel pass or ate up Spencer Rattler. So I'll be curious to see if they use that to counter the to the pass rush. Because I would say, you know, at Will McDonald, Jaquan Bailey, that defensive line is getting pressure from the defensive line, and it's coming from both sides. It's coming from the linebackers. It's coming from a safety here and there. Once in a while, they'll blitz corners, things like that. It's still not a blitzing defense, but the blitzes that John Haycock draws up are exotic, to say the least. It's a very complex defense. So it'll be interesting to see, like you said, a true chess match, because that's the kind of games that Iowa State kind of tends to get into, is the chess matches, especially against the Oklahoma States. They're really like the brilliant offensive teams. Those are the ones that Iowa State likes to get in those chess matches with. And then you can let John Haycock kind of do his thing. But, you know, overall, it's a really interesting game. And actually, one point that I just remembered, too, that I wanted to touch on is that you mentioned the extra bye week. Oklahoma State hasn't played a game for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
One bye week is one thing. Two of them is a different animal.
Especially having to get up for the Baylor right. game, but then have to throttle it back down. That I do
normally down the pipe, and he has two former players, Colm Dadden, who's a kicker, and Marchie Murdoch, who is a receiver. And both of them said bye weeks are the worst. That you kind of get out of your rhythm. You basically get cold a little bit. You have to get kind of warm back up and back into your rhythm. You have kind of different practices that week, things like that. Well, Oklahoma State just had two of them in a row. I'm not saying they're going to be rusty, but there's something to be said for two bye weeks consecutively. Whereas Iowa State's had, you know, they are coming off of a bye week, but they've been playing a pretty steady schedule up to this point. A pretty typical schedule up to this point. So Iowa State has the benefit of also being in a more typical rhythm going into this game. Do you have time for a second question on this podcast?
No, Philip and I have talked about that. We talked about that last week when we were supposed to record our Baylor preview. Thanks, Baylor, about having that.
You recorded it anyways.
we said some, yeah, screw Baylor. Anyways, we talked about that having one bye week is one thing. help guys get healthy, move on, whatever. But then you throttle back up for game week and you're ready to go. Oklahoma State had that. They had a few days of practice to get ready for game week and then had to go back down into a bye week. Now, and then they had to get it ready, you know, get it ramped back up for Iowa State. And that kind of up and down is a little bit concerning. It really is. Even though you have the game at home, it still is. It's one of those things that it's going to play a huge factor early on. If they really are ready to play this game, the first couple of possessions are going to tell us a lot.
I think that's a fair statement as well. I will say that Iowa State tends to start slow. We saw it against TCU. We saw it against, Texas Tech, and we saw it a bunch last year too, that Iowa State tends to, the first quarters are usually not super pretty for Iowa State, and then they get stronger throughout the game. The nice thing about the construction of this particular Iowa State team is that the running game is really good right now. It's not just a good running back behind a shit offensive line and then they just kind of figure out a way to manage. It's a good running back behind a good run blocking offensive line that they can use. Now they can finally, after 5 years of building this offensive line from scratch with high school kids, they can salt away a game with the running game. They can finally do that. That's something that has been something that Iowa State has wanted to accomplish for a long time, where they can lean on the running game and then use Brock Purdy when they need to, as opposed to having Brock Purdy do his thing and then just, you know, giving the ball to David or Breece and just hoping that they can do something to just be a cherry on top of relying on your quarterback to win. Now they can kind of lean on Breece to win. So part of the test for Oklahoma State's defense this weekend will be a consistent, concerted effort to run the ball. It'll be pounding and pounding and pounding and pounding over the course of an entire game, as opposed to 62 passes, you know, like we saw last year, where Iowa State is determined to run the ball. At least not yet to the point of being at fault, but it is, it's a much more consistent running game, much more effective running game, and a much more durable running game as far as its effectiveness throughout the game. Because the offensive line is good and they can wear down our defensive line. But obviously Oklahoma State has some really, really good defenders. TJ Ford is one of them. Is it
Bryce Ford? Yeah.
Bryce Ford. TJ Ford. Bryce Ford, yes.
Trace Forge. Trace. T-R-A-C.
Trace. I say Bryce?
Yes, you did.
Trace Ford. Okay. I knew it was a T. So it was T Ford. I knew that. But it was –
then you said Bryce.
I said Bryce. Well, I thought you said Bryce. It's your
anyways.
Now say Amon Ogbong Bamiga.
Amon Ogbong Bamiga.
There we go. All right.
Not bad.
You say better than most broadcasters, to be honest.
Now say Enyoma Iwazurike.
I'm not going to say.
You broke up. I couldn't hear you.
Enyoma Iwazurike.
Show me the phonetic spelling and I'll be fine.
I'm not sure the frenetic spelling is going to help you. I would say that a linebacker – used to have a linebacker. I think he was from – he's definitely Polynesian. He might have actually been from Hawaii. His name was Matt Tuofuo.
Tuofuo? Okay.
Tuofuo. It's T-A-U apostrophe O apostrophe A-O-U. Tuofuo.
I think there was a – I think it was Bedlam a few years ago. Oklahoma State had a tight end named Sione Finifeyuyaki, and awesome. he got tackled by Ogbonia Okoronkwo from OU. It was the greatest collision of vowels. Like,
it was the whole goddamn alphabet was involved in that tackle. Yeah.
No, just the vowels, all the vowels, lots of them, and yes. Their children and their cousins. Yes. I think it's really interesting that this series, the last 2 years, 2 years ago, 2018, Iowa State comes in after the first drive, puts in Brock Purdy. Oklahoma State is not prepared for Brock Purdy whatsoever, and Iowa State gets the win.
Iowa State wasn't prepared for Brock Purdy.
Oklahoma State comes in last year, completely changes their defensive strategy from what they'd done up to that point. Oklahoma State gets the win. I'm really curious what we should see, what we're going to see this year. Like, because it's two straight years where we've seen something completely other than what we expected in this game from one of the two teams. I'm just so curious. It just makes me in a series that has been incredibly close.
Yes.
Very, very close games.
I would posit that this particular series over the last, especially the last 5 years, but even before that, but especially the last 5 years has been the most entertaining series in the Big 12.
I'm fine with that. I was over the last 5 years. Okay, I'm fine with that. I mean, Bedlam has been pretty good just because typically they're high scoring, but this has been absolutely.
Well, and, you know, I would say OSU games are, I mean, they have some points or whatever, but they're just good games. Like they're not like even last year where Brock Purdy threw 45 interceptions, whatever it was, that was still like not a blowout. That's still a fairly close game, even giving everything that was happening.
No, it was a 7-point game for most of the game.
Fourth quarter. It was a 7-point game late in the fourth quarter. I mean,
This game hasn't been decided by more than 7 points since 2014. OSU won 37-20. Like, there was a stretch of games there, 2012, 13, and 14, where OSU was just winning handily. But the last five games, agreed, have not been decided by more than 7 points. They've been close games.
They're legitimate good games. They're not like game of the century 9-7 snooze fests. I mean, they're legit. They're legit good game. Like, I'm sorry, SEC, if your game of the century ended up at 9-7 and it was horrible, sit down. Anyways.
Yes. Well, that's because defense used to matter. Now it doesn't matter because offense matters. And so,
well, it's funny how overnight that, you know, when Big 12 offenses started showing up in the SEC and just obliterating people. Oh, all of a sudden the SEC is a garbage defense conference now.
No, the offense is just so good. The defense is still amazing, but it's just really, really good offense.
You know, see, I've heard some other stuff from SEC pundits that the SEC is a bad defensive conference now. They just will not concede that offenses can be good. They will never cede that ground.
Never.
They'll trash their own defenses before they compliment Big 12 offenses. They'll never do it. Ever.
I will burn my house down before I ever.
Like they will go to the ends of the earth to not compliment a Big 12 offense.
Was it Paul Feinbaum after Ole Miss's Lane Train put up what? 48 or 49 on Alabama's team? Oh, Alabama just got out schemed. They're still a really good defense. They just got out schemed. Okay, dude.
You're right. They did get out schemed.
Yeah, they did. They got their shit kicked in.
You're right.
They're also Alabama, and they scored
objectively nowhere close to as talented as Alabama, and they still put up whatever 40 however many points.
It was like 63-49.
It's like what?
They did get out schemed because that's what happens with good offensive scheme. It will beat good defense all day, every
perfect
day,
offense,
including on
always
Sunday.
Beats perfect defense.
Yes.
Period.
Yep. Absolutely.
Period. Yep.
Period.
All right, Levi. Let's see if we can get a score prediction out of you. What are you thinking for this one?
So I'm trying to decide if I should stay consistent with my score prediction from my own podcast.
Well, here, hold on. So let's ask this, Joel. I want to ask this question because I'm almost to the point where I hate score predictions because it's so impossible to accurately pick a score. Like, I wonder if a better.
I've gotten within four total points the last couple of weeks for the Iowa State game.
Well, look at la di da. Fine then. What's your score, Tom? Go ahead.
So. Well, the Oklahoma game, I predicted 38-28, and it was 37-30. And then last week I predicted I predicted like 35-14, and it was 31-13. This week, you're not going to like my score prediction. because of the gap in schedules that they've played, I think Iowa State is a far more tested team up to this point. I trust their quarterback more than I think Oklahoma State fans trust Spencer Sanders, or at least trust his health maybe. I would say the running games are at least on par with each other, even if Iowa State is averaging a little bit more yards per play in the running game. The passing game is maybe not quite as up to par as Oklahoma State. It's probably a wash on offense, to be honest. And I think Iowa State's defense is more experienced and it's battle tested. I mean, that defense has an absurd amount of snaps played on that thing, and they've got a really good pass rush. For that reason, I think Oklahoma State, I think it's close in the first half for sure. But my final score prediction is 37-17, Iowa State. I told you you're not going to like it.
Yikes.
I
understand you're going to pick Iowa State to win, but
Phil knows I'm a noted homer, but
I knew that. But even this is a bit
right.
Much for you.
So I wouldn't go on that far of a limb if I didn't have some reasoning. I think Oklahoma State is going to have trouble running the ball on this, and I think Iowa State will have less trouble running the ball against Oklahoma State.
So what I understand is you really don't have any respect for Oklahoma State's defense because of the games they've played. And you've decided because you beat an OU team that's not been very good, that Kansas State also beat in Norman, by the way, that Iowa State – you really just don't think that the Louisiana game – man,
Oklahoma's offense. And Iowa State held them to 30 points.
It is, but it's not.
Sure it is.
Remember, there was a position group that got basically wiped out by COVID. Would you like to know which position group that probably was? It's the one that always plays well and has not been playing well for Oklahoma up to this point.
Who's that?
The offensive line.
That's true. But I will say that I would say it outgained offense. I outgained Oklahoma, which I don't – that never happens. It's usually not that close either. I would say outgained Oklahoma in a shootout kind of. The defense is really experienced. I mean, Greg Eisworth has played 1,000 years at this point. Jaquan Bailey's been here for 5. If he really wanted to, because this year doesn't count, he could come back as a 6th-year senior. Landon Akers could literally – well, he's a receiver, but he could literally come back for a 7th year of college next year. You know, the whole defense is ridiculously experienced. There's a ton of snaps on there. It's not like it's a new scheme. I mean, it's a scheme that they've been playing for years. It's the same guys that have been playing in it for years. It's really solid. Like, we know what the Iowa State defense is. We just do. We know what it is. It's going to be somewhere between 20 and 30 points for the other team, probably. And they're probably going to be held below their averages. That's just what the Iowa State defense is. The Iowa State offense is the wild card. And the run blocking, having a sustainable running game up to this point, is a big factor. And it's not like – because Dave Montgomery, if he ever eclipsed – he never eclipsed 5 yards a carry in his career. I think he only – I'd have to look it up real quick. But he only topped out at maybe like 4.2 or something like that. Like, not much. And he's obviously really good at just finding yards places. Breece Hall is currently averaging 5.7 yards a carry, which is far and above anything that Iowa State has had in any recent memory. That running game is really good. And Brock Purdy, we know, can be very, very good. We haven't seen the flashy plays from him in the last few weeks, but he's actually been pretty efficient, honestly. He's been exactly what Iowa State has needed the last 3 games. TCU, aside from the play we shall never talk about ever again.
I was just about to ask you about that, actually.
Aside from that play, which we will never talk about ever again, Joel.
History.
It's real bad.
See, I would say this season's thing is to just erase all the things they don't like from memory, and then everything is hunky-dory. So they didn't lose to Louisiana. He didn't throw the worst interception of all time.
No, they did. Actually, it was a fumble, so he didn't throw an interception.
Oh, yes. I've heard you state that on your show.
Actually, that was the worst interception of all time.
Actually, teacher, anyway, you didn't assign homework this week.
He still completed 78% of his passes that game, which is ridiculous.
One remembers that. They remember the bad interception.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Is like the Louisiana game and that one play overshadows the Brock Purdy, especially in Big 12 play, has actually been pretty good. Yeah, he was only 51% or whatever against Oklahoma. Well, he was exactly what they needed. He made all of the plays he needed to make to win that game. Same way with TCU. With Texas Tech, he was just efficient. He did his job, made good passes, made good decisions, tested the defense a couple times, maybe where he didn't need to, but otherwise, you know, he's just efficient. He's just good at his job. He doesn't need to be 2018 Brock Purdy for Iowa State to win games anymore. He just needs to be good. Well, Breece, we have Breece Hall.
We asked, and we got an answer to our question. So
that we did. That we did.
You did. I just feel really good about this game. Part of it too is the limited crowd size, which Oklahoma State's fans are on your ass in that stadium. They are on top of you in those goddamn paddles or whatever. I don't hate the paddles. They're kind of cool, but you know, there's only going to be, how many fans are at the stadium?
It's like 15,000. 15,000. It's with 25%.
It's a pretty limited crowd size. So it's not like the crowd factor that Vegas would probably, you know, they probably still did include that in their line for this game, which I think has been kind of hovering around 3.5 points most of the week.
It stayed 3.5 from what I've seen.
It stayed 3.5, which, you know, that's – so basically, because home field is a 3-point advantage, they're saying it's a toss-up on a neutral field, basically. Yeah. Well, with only 15,000 fans there, you're much closer to a neutral field. Now, 15,000 fans is a big difference from zero, like Iowa State had the first game. But, you know, not quite as intimidating of an environment. I'm assuming that Oklahoma State will not again switch up their defensive scheme right before the game. I mean, maybe they will. Maybe they watch the Louisiana film and they're just going to run all man. And then we're like, well, fuck. Like, I don't, if they run all man, and we're going to lose by 20. I don't know what's going on here. Because part of what Iowa State does really well on offense and part of what makes them really good is they're really good at scheming, especially their tight ends, but their receivers, they're really good at scheming them into space. They're not necessarily if the other defense is really athletic and can play man defense, I would say it's athleticism isn't so far and above Louisiana's where they can just outrun all of the man defenders and that. And they're obviously not going to be able to do that against Oklahoma State, but not that I'm expecting Oklahoma State just randomly switch to a man defense, because that would be in the Big 12 that would be suicide.
Not for one game, as
LSU saw in that first game against Mississippi State, but you know, pending a massive defensive adjustment from Oklahoma State, I think Iowa State will be far more prepared to deal with Oklahoma State's defense this time around. The offense is much better at getting actual space for a running back, so hopefully Tom Manning doesn't decide to just go full air raid in the second half like he did last year. And for all of those reasons, I think Iowa State will. It'll be a close game for sure into half, but I think in the second half, Iowa State will start to pull away a little bit through the run game. This is all new territory for me. As long as Iowa State's good, I'm going to keep talking my shit, because I know this whole thing can come crumbling down in 5 seconds.
You mean Will, yeah.
Yeah, all empires fall eventually.
Hey, all right, Levi, before we get you out of here, plug your social media real quick. Where can everyone follow you on Twitter, follow your work, all that good stuff?
It's just wideratnattylight.com. The Twitter handle is @widertnattylt. I don't really tweet about Iowa like sports necessarily that often for my personal Twitter, but if you like just general nonsense, it's @LeviRStev, STEV. That's pretty much it. I started doing gaming streamings this week. My YouTube channel is Spaceman Gaming, but other than that,
Levi is fun to get into arguments with.
Yes, I am.
Don't get angry. Just have a nice argument discussion with Levi. It's fun.
Yeah. I try to make it fun.
All right, Levi. Hey, thanks, man, for joining us tonight. Give us a little perspective. And I look forward to watching you eat your words on Saturday.
That's fine. I'll have beers. Whatever. I can suck whatever I want up. It's fine. I regret nothing, because if I win, I look like if we score that many points, and if that's the final score, then I look like a goddamn genius. I'll be like the coach that kicks the onside kick in the second quarter. Whatever.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you to Levi Stevenson for his blatant homerism for Iowa State on this podcast. That was something. That interview existed.
I love Levi. I do.
That was a great conversation, but my God, I about fell out of my chair.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm a homer. I don't try to be a homer.
Same.
If I was a homer, I'd pick OSU to win the Big 12 every year. Just say that every single recruit we landed is underrated, should have been a 4 or 5 star guy. Like, I'm not a homer. I will try and be as blunt and honest as I can and be fair in the way I talk about things. Could Iowa State win this game by 20? Sure. Oklahoma State's lost back to back. He's lost to Texas Tech 2 years in a row and has no business losing to Texas Tech. So crazy shit happens with Oklahoma State football. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
Is that something that I look at this game and I look at these teams and I look at the situations and go, Iowa State's going to pull away offensively in the second half? No. All right, but, you know, whatever.
So let's start on offense here. Let's go back. Let's give a couple keys to the game on each side. Just some, you know, just general thoughts of what we want to see on offense for Oklahoma State. What are your just initial thoughts? How does Oklahoma State find a way to just, you know, put points on the board? Because this is going to be a fairly good offensive game for both teams. Both teams have good quarterback play, good weapons. they're going to put up points for sure.
Levi is right. And we read the stat. Iowa State is a really good run defense. They are a good run defense. It's hard to run on Iowa State. Even with Chuba, even if the offensive line is playing better, it's still hard to run on Iowa State. The offensive game plan is going to have to force Iowa State's defense to open up to allow for better running lanes, like it just is. If they're loading the box, it's not going to work. So you need to throw to the outside. And I want you – it's about the passing game. I want to see throws to the outside. I want to see quick throws to the outside. And I want to see them put Spencer Sanders in – situations that are easy for him, play to his strengths early in the game to get him comfortable and get him going. Don't put him in tough spots early. Please don't force him to do crazy stuff. I'm fine if you don't throw deep till the second quarter or the third quarter. I know that's not fun. That's not what we want to see. That's not what this offense wants to be. But don't force things into the offense you want to be. Let the offense run about what the strengths are as he gets comfortable in playing in a game. Again, he has played one drive and one snap this season. If Spencer Sanders is the starter on Saturday, which we all believe he's going to be if he's truly at 100%, I don't buy the two quarterback system smoke. I just don't. That's that coach speak nonsense. I don't. So if he's the guy, let him get comfortable. Don't ask too much of him early. Let him get comfortable and then go. Now, here's the thing for Iowa State's defense. We can talk about run defense all day. Spencer Sanders' ability to run the ball, his legs are what opens up the run game.
Yes.
It's what happened last year. Chuba was able to have more run lanes because they had to account for Spencer. We saw Spencer go out. They loaded the box even more to stop Chuba, and Chuba struggled because you had a okay offensive line again last year and a not mobile quarterback once Sanders was out. So I hope he's 100% because that – factor is such a big deal for Oklahoma State that I don't care how good your run defense is, if he is escaping and he is gaining yards, it's going to open things up. So put Spencer Sanders in good positions. That is key number one for me.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the offensive line. I think this is going to be a huge test for them. Iowa State is able to rush four and get to the quarterback. They've been able to do it. They were able to do it against Oklahoma. Take whatever Oklahoma's offensive line was in that game. Oklahoma still has enough dudes in the two deep to be able to put together a good offensive line, and Iowa State was still able to get to it. And I will, if there is one benefit, if you can try and find one to the back-to-back bye weeks, it's being able to continue the continuity of the musical chairs Oklahoma State had to play on the offensive line. They seem to have found something that worked in the Kansas game. All Kansas game, whatever, Oklahoma State was able to run the ball really effectively. And Springfield, Sills, Schneider, Woodard, and Jenkins. And that was the group against West Virginia. So that'll get a little bit better, played a little bit better against Kansas. Even though they didn't play a couple weeks, getting those reps in practice, getting that continuity with the rest of the offense, let's see if that pays any sort of dividend at all. If they're able to keep Spencer Sanders, give Spencer Sanders enough time to make some throws and open enough lanes for Chuba and LD, it's going to make a difference. And all you have to do is just do enough to let Sanders get rid of the ball. I'm not looking for some crazy A-plus miracle game from the offensive line, but we saw the week-to-week improvement there. Let's see if that's continued even despite not being able to play another opponent on the other side of you besides your own teammates. My biggest
thing go ahead.
Say my biggest key though and it kind of goes hand in hand a little bit, but Spencer Sanders has to hold on to the ball. He cannot turn the ball over. We saw it last year. He was very turnover prone at times, fumbled the ball a lot. He made some really stupid throws. We need to see the progression early. Because here's the thing, and I'm not trying to start a quarterback controversy at all. But Spencer Sanders, if he turns the ball over a lot in this game or even a couple times, I think Shane Ellingworth showed enough that you can trust him with this offense to go and put up points and go and make enough plays to keep Oklahoma State in the game. I think the leash is going to be tight on Sanders' recklessness with the ball. and just, I'm going to call it what it is. If Spencer Sanders, as high as I am on him, if he can't take care of the football, there is a capable backup in there that Oklahoma State would probably show the willingness to go to in a spot where a couple turnovers, they'll throw 16 in there and he'll go and make some plays.
So we've talked about Oklahoma State on defense a lot. And one of the things we keep talking about is that third down defense.
Yes.
Through three games, they have allowed 7 third down conversions out of 43 attempts. So success rate of 0.163. Now, again, Kansas is thrown in there, and they didn't allow Tulsa to convert one. So a lot of that was done by West Virginia, who is arguably the best team they faced so far.
And they still held them to what? It was what? They were what, 6 for 20-something on third down?
That sounds right. I'd have to go.
Either way, like, it was still a good number. Like, they were still getting off the field on money down for this little match.
Iowa State's been pretty solid on third down for the season. Oh, I just, the calculator clip, just closed. They're completing 43% of their third down attempts, okay, with the exception of one game. TCU held them to 3 of 11. So you take that game out, they're completing like 47, almost half of their third down attempts. So Iowa State's a good team on third down. I think Kolar is a big part of that. I bet if I went back and actually tracked the third down attempts, you'd find that he's been a big piece of that. That tends to happen. I think that's a big thing here. I think that's a situation where Oklahoma State, West Virginia was 6 of 17. So 6 of the 7 completed third downs against Oklahoma State were West Virginia. So there you go. I think that's a big thing for Oklahoma State. Get off the field. Don't let Iowa State string together long drives. A big play is going to happen. It just is. You're going to give up a big touchdown. You did it against Tulsa, had a big play. West Virginia had a big play. It's okay. One big play is not going to kill you in this game. They've been really good on third down. They have got to stay really good on third down. You cannot let them convert and make long drives. This defense is really good, but there's some depth to it, but the point that Levi made on Iowa State pulling away at the end of the game is not entire by pounding the rock with Breece Hall. It's not entirely inaccurate. Like, if they're able to put long drives together, and Breece Hall is running and running and running, he's had a week off. He's going to be rested. Now, they run the crap out of him. Like, they almost run him more this season than OSU did Chuba Hubbard last year. So understand that. Like, but he's rested. It's still early in the season. He's going to be okay running the ball a lot. They have got to get Iowa State off the field. They've got to keep this third down defense that is so good, so good. They're going to get some. That's okay. To that end, on the other side, the defense is good, but don't put them in spots where they are forced to be good, better and better and better when they're exhausted. Offensive drives have to happen. It's not even about turnovers. You can't be having a bunch of 3 and outs. They have got to keep the offense on the field. I don't want to see a situation where the defense is great through the first half, but by the start of the fourth quarter, they're so gassed that it turns into an offensive shootout. We haven't seen enough from Oklahoma State's offense to this point to go, yeah, they can win a shootout. They have had to win with defense. Again, take the Kansas game out of it. I understand they look good against Kansas. Everyone looks good against Kansas. You have to take that game out. Spencer Sanders hasn't played much. This defense is good, but don't put so much on them that they are not going to wilt at the end of the game, but be unable to live up to the expectations we have because we put so much on top, more on them than they can handle. This is a really good defense. This is not a bunch of guys who are going to be hitting Pro Bowls. Let's just be blunt about this defense and the talent on it. It's a really good defense. It's not Alabama, so it doesn't have the depth of a team like that. So don't put so much pressure on them that they can't help win the game.
To the end of getting off the field on third down, they're going to have to find ways to get a good pass rush and keep Brock Purdy uncomfortable. And they have the guys to do it. They have the defensive line. It's not necessarily crazy depth, but they have enough talent there. the edge rushers, having Calvin Bundage, Trace Ford, Tyron Irby showing a little bit of it as well, being able to get after the quarterback and force Brock Purdy out of structure is going to do a lot for this team. He's able to make plays out of structure, but having to do it consistently, I don't know if he'll be able to do it. He's not going to be able to throw off his back foot when he's running out of the pocket. You've got to find ways to keep him honest. And when it gets to third down and you get to third and long and obvious passing downs, it's going to matter. You're going to have to get out the field. And part of that is getting Brock Purdy out of structure. And if Oklahoma State can do that, it's going to lend itself to getting a field on third down or force turnovers, especially if Oklahoma State has a lead in this game late like they did last year. And Brock Purdy will force throws. He kind of has that gunslinger mentality, as Levi mentioned, that he's willing to force the ball into a tight window. And it led to multiple turnovers last year. In the same, you know, by the same token, it can lead to the same this year. Getting after him and getting a couple sacks, hitting him early like they did last year, is going to pay off big time for this defense early on.
All right. Score and uniform?
All right. I've kind of gone back and forth a little bit. I think the second bye week has made me think about it a little bit more. But I do trust the Oklahoma State defense to make a play late. They did it last year. They made multiple plays late last year to keep Oklahoma State in that game. And I think they're going to be able to do enough on offense. I think the weapons are there. If Spencer Sanders is really healthy, then I feel good about where this offense is going to be at, to be able to make enough plays to win a really close game. This is going to be a very tight game. It's going to be a sweaty one. We're not really going to enjoy it, be able to truly enjoy it, because it's going to be stressful from the opening kickoff to the clock. It's triple zeros. I'm going to take Oklahoma State 33-30. I think they make a stop late to hold on here at home.
All right. I understand the notion that Iowa State starts slow. I do think this is a bit of a slog early, but this feels like a game, because of all the time off, where Iowa State gets a lead at halftime. Kind of like that TCU game, Oklahoma State makes a charge in the second half but falls just short. I think this is a game where I believe Oklahoma State is the better team than Iowa State. And if all things were equal, Oklahoma State would win this game. That 3 weeks off, not having the game against Baylor to get Spencer Sanders game reps before having to go through this four-game run, puts Oklahoma State in a really tough spot against an Iowa State team that's coming into the spot where it tends to play its best football. And Brock Purdy tends to play his best football. I think Iowa State wins this one close. Again, I think they hang on for the win. I think OSU makes a valiant run at it, but comes up just short late. F Baylor. That's going to be the motto for the rest of the season. If things go poorly, because I'm going to blame them for the fact that they couldn't get their shit together and we couldn't have that nice warm-up win before we had to go through this four-game stretch. So I will either be correct and sad or incorrect and happy on Saturday night.
All right. Well, we'll see who's right there. Do you have a uniform prediction for this one? I think Iowa State's white, white, red. So
they
takes out a white helmet for me.
They are wearing the combo they wore for Brock Purdy's debut win back in 2018 when they came to Stillwater. That is the uniform combination they are wearing.
I remember that.
On Saturday. I'm going to say afternoon game, 2:30. 'm gonna go black, black, orange.
That's exactly what I was saying too. I was saying black, black, orange.
And I think it's gonna be that the really busy, the Paisley helmet with all the details and stuff on it. That's what it feels like. Feels like black Paisley helmet, black jersey, orange pants.
Give me that kind of the chrome brand on the side that they wore last year against Iowa State on the road.
That's a nice helmet.
Yeah, I'll go black, black, orange just like you, and we'll see where it goes. This is going to be a really tough game. It's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a fun game. Well, not fun at all. I'm actually probably going to hate my life for 3-ish hours. So
get your beers ready, folks. You're going to need them one way or the other.
You will need them one way or the other, absolutely.
Stock up.
Yeah. All right. Philip, where can everyone follow you on Twitter?
Follow me personally at OKTXAR Poke. You can follow my show, The 1012, at 1012 Podcast, available anywhere podcasts are available. Of course, we're on Twitter at 1012 Podcast, TEN, the number 12, the word podcast.
Follow me at JT Penfield. Be sure to follow me on the site at Cowboys RFF. We'll be back after the game against Iowa State. We'll recap it and any other Oklahoma State news that should come up over the next couple of days. We'll talk to you all then.